Hello, everyone. My name is Kayla.
And I'm Steph, and welcome to the Witch Story Podcast.
Witch Story Podcast discusses real cases of witch trials, tales, and other stories related to witchcraft. As always, Steph and I are trying our best to shed light on the true histories of witches to the best of our abilities. For today's episode, we are talking about the possession of several French nuns and a priest that was convicted of being a witch. The title was not clickbait at all, but I do have to add that there is a trigger warning in this episode as we do talk about sexual assault of a minor. We do not go into any detail about the assault, but the episode does revolve around this topic, so if that is not something suited for you, or if you have children listening, please skip this episode and we will join you another week. Besides that, I'd like to welcome Steph back on, as she wasn't with us last week and she can pronounce all the French names and cities for us. So go ahead, Steph.
Our story begins in 1605 in Aix-en-Provence, the south of France, with Madeleine de Demandol de la Palue, a wealthy daughter of an aristocratic religious family from Marseille, sent at age 12 to become an Ursuline nun. At the time, the Ursulines was a new religious order, only forming a few years earlier in 1572. It was founded by Angela Medici in Milan under the patronage of Saint Ursula and became very popular in France. Many girls would be raised and educated together in the monasteries, and the tradition of joining an Ursuline school or convent still exists today. Madeleine would join her convent with five other girls from wealthy families, also preparing to be nuns. After 2 years, Madeleine was sent home after becoming terribly depressed.
Yeah, I'd be depressed too.
Yeah, me too.
But it seems that like a lot of people wanted to at the time.
Yeah, so. I mean, it brings honor to your family. Let's say if you have like two girls and a son, like one girl should at least be a nun, one girl can be married off, and then you have a son. That sounds awful, but I feel like that's definitely what happened back then a lot of the time.
Yeah, and I mean, that's your culture. That's all you know, right? Like, everyone's religious. Exactly. Everyone wants to be part of the church.
Yeah, exactly. So. Like, very Roman Catholic.
Yeah.
So, like, always.
So, a family friend, Father Louis Gaufridi. Yeah, that's an Italian name, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't sound French.
No. Was a parish priest and came to visit Madeleine and the family.
Father Louis Gaufridi was not as wealthy as his aristocratic friends, but he still hung out with the upper class, the elite, and he was religious and charismatic and very handsome, so everyone looked to him as like a good friend, a good person, and somebody with status, even if that status isn't money. Even while being 20 years older than 14-year-old Madeleine, he began regularly visiting her, and it was overlooked by everyone in the community, including both Madeleine's Ursuline mother, so the head nun of her convent, and it was also overlooked by her real mother. Madeleine took quite a liking to him as well, and there were warnings that his behavior was inappropriate, but because of this status and charisma that Father Gaufridi had, it was more or less tolerated during that period of time.
Yeah, it wasn't really okay. It was just people of that position took advantage of it constantly, especially with the influence they had over their flock, as they would call it. Not to sound gruesome, but it makes sense in their way, I guess.
And like, I feel like the church is as important as the government. So who's going to complain about him?
Well, I mean, church and state were definitely linked.
If not equal, like one definitely influenced the other.
Mm-hmm.
So then in 1607, when Madeleine went to the convent in Marseille again, she confessed to the nun, Mother Catherine, the head nun, that she had sexual relations with Father Gaufridi. And in turn, Mother Catherine decided to send Madeleine back to Aix-en-Provence, so she was as far away from Gaufridi. And this is interesting because instead of tackling the Gaufridi issue immediately, she decided, let's send Madeleine away because that just, you know, seemed easier. And although it was only 30 kilometers away, it was more remote for the Father Gaufridi to get to. And so all seemed well until it wasn't.
Two years later.
In 1609, Madeline is now 16 years old. And Christmas was almost around the corner, and Madeline began acting very strange and super out of character. She began to suffer fits and convulsions, and also claimed to be having visions of demons. And during her convulsions, she often spoke about Father Louis Galfridi. And on top of all of this, Madeline was also witnessed breaking a crucifix during confession. Confession in the Catholic religion is kind of like this tradition or ritual where you basically confess all of your sins to a priest to have them forgiven, right?
Confession, yeah. It's basically what it's called. But yeah, I know that, like, breaking the crucifix just reminds me of The Exorcist. I just wanted to add that in there because it freaks me out a little bit. But
yeah. Every exorcism movie or possession movie, you have the priest with the cross, and then all of a sudden it's on the wall upside down.
Yeah. I feel like she started having these possessions or experiences based on PTSD. I mean, a priest, an older priest, groomed her when she was a child still. And this is somebody who's supposed to be married to God. So I feel like her brain is somehow finding a way to express this feeling. And this feeling only makes sense in saying it's a demonic possession because it's not natural to her. This was never supposed to happen. So how is she supposed to make sense of all this? Like, she's supposed to be married to Christ, and yet she has to make sense of being basically raped, or actually, no, essentially raped. It was rape.
It was rape.
Yeah. It was 100% rape. And I think that's just how her brain tried to make a sense of it. And it's definitely a form of PTSD, 100%. Like, that's how I think about it.
I have a theory too. I don't think it's going to be liked, but I'll leave it till the end.
Okay.
It's definitely not a popular theory, but it's kind of like not a good one. Anyways, so the priest at this convent now, his name was Father
Romillon.
Thank you. So Father Romillon tried to exorcise her. In fact, he tried to exorcise her multiple times because he couldn't figure out what was wrong with her and thought that she was possessed. And it wasn't successful, but in fact, it seemed that her possessions spread and possessed other nuns, because other nuns were also having convulsions, demonic visions, and they also lost their speech. If in solidarity you wanted me to be possessed too, to stick up for your rights, I'll pretend I'm possessed.
Yeah. Or also, like, if they see you acting that way and, like, she tells them her story and stuff like that, like, it will obviously haunt them and they will feel the same way and express it in the same way as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think. Yeah.
Or they were also maybe all dehydrated because of
apparently. And that too.
That's the thing. That was apparently, like, very common. And so a few months went past and a lot of these nuns were still in their possessed state. So Father Romillon decided to confront Father Galfridi, believing that maybe it actually did start with his relations with Madeline. But of course, Galfridi denied all accusations.
What a fucking surprise.
Yeah, why would you admit to that? And curiously, I also read that one of the reasons that she possibly wasn't believed earlier, besides the fact that she's accusing a super popular religious person, was that prior to the 17th century, the testimony of a person that appeared to be possessed was actually not considered reliable as real news or as an accusation in this case, as it was likely from the quote-unquote father of lies that was from the Bible, John 8:44. So it was common not to believe a possessed person, and apparently a lot of people were possessed, for them to even make this rule I guess. But anyways, Madeline persisted with her story, and she accused Father Louis Goffredi of having sex with her since she was 9. Also that he denied God. Also that he gave her a birth control in the form of a powder so she wouldn't have his babies. And finally, she accused him of giving her a little green familiar. And if you haven't listened from our previous episodes or don't know what familiar is, it's this like supernatural entity. Think of a demon that assists witches with their craft. So she said that Goffredi gave her one of these little demon guys as well.
What on earth?
Yeah, and then obviously Goffredi denied this accusation once again. So Father Romillon decided that they need to exorcise Madeline and the other nuns more and better.
Mm-hmm. That's going to work. Yes, so Father Romillon went to Avignon to seek the aid of the Grand Inquisitor Sébastien Michalis. I don't think that's French. That just sounds like kind of like ancient, like Latin or Greek or something. Yeah.
My notes for him are basically that he's a super scary man. He supposedly was really good at what he did, and this was finding witches and burning them at the stake. By the time he was asked for help, he had already burned 18 witches at the stake. So he was not messing around with witchcraft. And his brilliant idea was that he was going to exorcise Madeline and the other nuns at Saint-Baume. Okay.
Baume. Yeah, Saint-Baume.
And the significance of this place was that it was a holy cave, supposedly where Mary Magdalene, one of Jesus's followers and wife, actually escaped to and lived.
Yeah. Although like there are a lot of, like, I wouldn't say myths, but there's a lot of like, what would you call it? Folklore or maybe myths that like, especially conspiracies that Mary Magdalene fled to France and stuff. So like, It kind of makes sense.
And I bet France is just like, this is great for tourism.
Oh yeah. You can be purified at this cave. Go. Pay me $10. 10 euros, sorry. Not dollars.
Free exorcisms.
Yeah.
So in this cave, they were trying to be exorcised, but all the nuns would apparently just swear and grunt in these deep, low, demonic voices, all appearing more possessed than the other, or trying to outpossess the other person. So this idea failed. And next they went to
François Domptius.
Thank you. A Flemish, I'm making you read all this stuff and it's not even French.
<It's okay. laughs>
A Flemish Dominican priest who also did exorcisms, because this is apparently a popular career choice back then. And during the exorcism, Madeline's low, grunty, possessed voice said that she was possessed by the demons Beelzebub, Leviathan, Baalberith, Asmodeus. This rhymes with Amadeus Mozart.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's so true.
Amadeus. I'm just picturing all of the nuns being possessed and singing that song.
Can we make like a meme of that or just like a picture and just like edit it and put the lyrics of that song and it's just like a picture of a bunch of nuns?
Yeah, I'll put that on the gram.
Okay.
Everyone, please follow us at Witch Story. I will make this happen. I'm just going to quickly repeat all the demons' names in case you didn't catch that, although I don't think I should be saying their names out loud. Anyways, she was possessed by Beelzebub, Leviathan, Baalberith, Asmodeus, Astaroth, and 6,661 other demons. But add that up, and the total is 6,666.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Now, one of the other nuns that was also there being exorcised, her name was
Louise Capot.
She too started talking in a deep, low voice as well, saying that she was possessed by the demons by the name of Varin, Gressel, and
Sonnelin.
She's saying them like French, like Varin, Gressel, and Sonnelin. I don't know. I feel like if she's French, then she's going to say it the French way.
French demons, yeah.
French demons.
And now I'm sure that all of the other nuns are saying that they're being possessed by so-and-so demon. But Louise's is important as it comes further into play in our story. Her possession by the demon Varin specifically was important because Varin came out, his voice came out, and said that, yes, Louis Galfridi was to blame for Madeline's possession and subsequently all of the other possessions. So now because of this, finally, Galfridi was seen as guilty by Francois Domptoit. So before this, no, whatever. But finally, because a demon said it, he was guilty.
Wait, so they listen to a demon?
They listen to a demon over the girl.
But not the testimony of the girl?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, super dumb. So even though Francois Domptius, aka Exorciser number 3, found him guilty, he was sent to jail. Galfridi was sent to jail. But it was still hard to convict him and hold him in jail. Many of his friends and colleagues came out and defended him and said there was no hard evidence. He's a great religious man. So he was released by Sebastian Michaelis, if you remember that was Grand Inquisitor, spooky man. But Michaelis did decide to confine Madeline at a convent at St. Baume, where she became obviously manic depressive and her possessions got even worse.
Poor girl.
I know.
My God.
Like, if nobody would believe me and that traumatic thing happened to me, I'd fucking be like slamming my head into a wall. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, probably.
Madeline was still having her demonic visions and she began talking about these sabbats that people were having sex at and eating babies at. And also, at this time, one of her demons that were possessing her, Beelzebub, attempted to ruin her health by cracking all her bones. And yeah, her health was visibly diminishing because of all of this. And there was even attempts of suicide. Seeing all of this, Michaelis finally pressured the parliament, aka the government, to bring Galfridi to trial in court.
Well, thank goodness. I feel like this is also her trying to convince them that, like, this man, like, he needs to be taken down. Like, this has to stop.
Yeah. Basically. And it might also be that because she saw that they finally listened to a demon, like she went to prove that a demon was within her, blaming Galfridi for this.
Yeah.
So the breaking her bones, like, it might have been her just going to, like, the most extent possible to have someone believe her, you know?
I think so. Mm-hmm.
So the trial commenced, and the main witnesses against Galfridi were Madeline herself and the other nun, Louise. Madeline said that she still loved Galfridi, and she even imitated the sexual acts that they did together in front of everyone in the court. She was also checked by physicians to make sure she wasn't lying and that she was not a virgin, and indeed this was confirmed. And during this physical check, they also found devil's marks on her feet and under her breast that appeared and disappeared several times.
Interesting.
Yeah, that part was really odd because...
Yeah, because, like, you wonder what they would perceive as those marks. Like, are they bruises? Are they bite marks? Or, like, are they...
moles or beauty marks or scars? For our listeners that don't know, witches' marks are marks that could have been left by a devil, or it could have been a teat for those familiars I mentioned earlier to, you know, suckle upon, because women can feed demons, you know. But it was something that was never really concrete, you know. It could have been a mole, like I said, or a scar, a birthmark that anyone has. It wasn't something in particular. It was just anything on your skin that they could have pointed at and been like, witchcraft. But for it to appear and reappear, I'm almost thinking it could be hives.
Mm-hmm.
Like red hives?
Yeah, because they said they disappear. So obviously it would be something that would go away. Like,
But whatever this marking on Madeline's body was, they pricked it with a sharp pin to make sure it was a witch's mark or not a witch's mark. And they wanted to see if it would, if you're a witch or not, yeah. If it bleeds or not.
If it bleeds, yeah.
And this didn't seem to affect Madeline at all. So she wasn't deemed a witch. But I should mention this whole time that this trial was happening that Father Louis Galfridi, he was actually held in a rat-infested dungeon. And there he was also being tested and tortured and shaved and checked for these suspicious devil marks or moles.
Good. And, I mean, what?
Yeah. No, good. And after three were found on him, Galfridi ended up confessing to Madeline's claims, all of it, the sexual relations, the Sabbats, as well as being prince of the synagogue. And, oh, I feel like we should do an entire episode on this, how witchcraft and Judaism...
As witchcraft in itself, yeah.
Like yeah. Even the word Sabbath comes from, like, a Jewish Shabbat, Judaism. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he confessed to all that and also the whole eating babies ordeal. And he even said that he signed a blood pact with a devil promising that women would follow him everywhere, which, ew.
Yeah, that was probably the smartest thing he could do, though, than actually confessing to raping a person. Like, yeah. Again, you're using the devil as a scapegoat. Therefore, yeah. Like, you're basically saying that you were coerced and that you're not actually guilty.
And one thing that I do wonder about this, though, is if he confessed, because obviously this whole time he's probably being tortured, et cetera. I wonder if it was all the torture that got to him or those suspicious devil marks that he was just like, well, they found marks on me. I must be guilty. Like,
he must also, like, not to make him sound like a better person because he was a shit stain under my shoe, but to confess, even if he wasn't tortured, because of his position, because he was a priest, and because he was basically, he did his education in the church and stuff like that, so he was influenced like for a long time in his life, that he must have felt conflicted at some points, not to make him sound like a better person, but I feel like he must have felt that confliction, like, I am a terrible person, I've done awful things, I've done things against God and against my oath, like, I should be condemned. So I will say all of this so that I am condemned to somehow redeem myself.
And normally I would stand up for the witch and, like, our trials and be like, because of torture, she was told to say all of these things, which he was probably, like you said, that kind of, like, saved him in a way. Like, he still died, obviously. Yeah. But I'm happy that he went through all this torture because it's fucked up.
It is. It's very screwed up. Yeah. And he definitely used his position to his advantage and paid for it in the end. And, like, it sucks, but it's also hilarious that, like, oh, I suddenly feel guilty in the end after I did everything. Oh, what I did was actually wrong. Like, ugh, go away. Please die.
Yeah, let's talk about that execution. On April 30th, 1611, Father Galfridi, after being found guilty of sexual assault and witchcraft, was executed and burned to ashes. Before he was burned, he was heavily tortured and defrocked. Defrocked is when you strip a priest of everything that makes him a priest, your clothing and your rites. And he was put on a strappado and squassation, not one, not two, but three times. The strappado is a torture device that they used to use where they would tie up your hands behind your back with a rope, hoist you up high, and then drop you. During this process, your bones would dislocate and break. The squat station was something that you can add to it, which is weights to your ankles, and during this process, it would make it hurt more. Then Louis Galfridi was bound to some wood and dragged throughout the streets of Ai for about 5 hours, while people around the town would line up to parade and make fun of him, probably throw stuff at him because he was such a horrible person. Then after this, he was given, I put air quotes, mercy by being strangled before he was burned. This was instead of burning slowly on the stake. So he still did die.
At least he was burned. Like, I'm happy that he was burned in the end, because I was a little concerned, since he was a priest and since he did have that position, I was worried that that would stop them from
that he'd get away with it.
Exactly.
Yeah. One thing that I do like that he did or didn't do was he didn't accuse anyone else for witchcraft, any other individuals, because usually when you're being tortured, they get you to point a finger or say that somebody else is a witch and trying to help you. But nobody else in this situation was accused of witchcraft. Let's take a look about what happened to Madeline after and the other nuns. Madeline was instantly cured upon Galfridi's execution, but her infection or possessions actually spread to other convents.
Maybe in other convents this was occurring as well. I wouldn't be surprised at all. I mean, I bet you it was a common thing too. And so maybe they started to revolt, or even if it didn't happen to other nuns in convents, like, most of them were probably really depressed. So,
Or like you said, if this was the only way that they could accuse a sexual assaulter, if the same thing was happening to them and they heard that this works, well, then might as well try it, right? I'll kind of save that for the end. I'll finish up with Madeline. When she turned 49, it was year 1642, and she was accused this time of witchcraft. But she defended herself and paid off whatever fine she had to pay with some inherited money. I think by this time her family had either left or passed away. Then 10 years after that, in 1652, she was accused again of witchcraft and had to pay not only a large fine, but she actually also had to go to prison. She spent 10 years in prison, and then she was given to a relative in Chateauvieux, where she lived until the end of her days at age 77, where she passed on December 20th, 1670. As for Louise, the other nun in the trials who was possessed, she was actually possessed until her death. So she didn't really get anything out of this, except for, of course, helping her friend out. But I don't know why she did this. She accused a blind girl of witchcraft, and that girl was actually executed a few months later after Galfridi's trial in July of 1611. So things didn't really end up well for Louise.
Well, obviously Louise had some problems.
Yeah.
Goodness.
Yeah.
That was not necessary. I think that the story could definitely be extended, just because, like, there's so much here. And I don't know if it was recorded before, but like, rape back then was also seen as a crime of passion rather than to be accused of violence. So a lot of the time it was pretty easy to convince the court and the church that it was a crime of love, or I did this out of love rather than anything else.
Yeah.
So chivalry at this point was not completely dead, but for the most part, yes. And it sucks because, like, that whole notion did originate in France. And so it's kind of sad to see something like that be completely torn down, and the devil being used as a scapegoat became more and more frequent.
Mm-hmm. So my theory that I mentioned earlier, and I think we should discuss this just a little bit, because I actually don't agree with this theory. I just know that it's what some people assume or may want us to talk about, is what if Galfridi was innocent? Because, like it was mentioned, there actually was no hard evidence besides the possession. And what supports that theory is that all this charisma that, you know, he was maybe he was a good person, and that Madeline, when she's talked about as a child, she's often referred to as the super spoiled, like bratty young child. What if she just wanted him to herself because she had some issues or whatever? And she thought, maybe if I say I'm possessed and that we slept together, maybe we have to be together forever. Like I said, I do not support this theory. I just think that it should be just briefly talked about.
I don't think she would, especially if she acted out sex acts when she was that young. I feel like, and also back then, sex wasn't talked about, okay? No. Sex was barely, like, you were only taught about sex literally the night that you were wed so that you'd know what to do. She's supposed to be a nun, okay? She's not even supposed to know any of these things. You don't learn about sex at all unless you actually do it, mm-hmm. right? So I feel like she definitely was raped 100% yeah. and that he is guilty 100% because nothing else makes sense yeah. to me.
I completely agree with that yeah. too. sorry, I just think it is something that people may question when they hear this podcast and have questioned when they read about this story. And especially because the whole witchcraft trial got in the way, that already lacks evidence that people may see the whole thing as bogus.
I find it strange that a nun would go willingly, because like when you're a nun, you're married to Christ, right? You would rather be burned at the stake than have sex because you're married to Christ. It's literally, that's what the Ursulines, like that was their code. Like you are virgins. You made a pact to be virgins for the rest of your life. That was a thing, mm-hmm. you know?
But do you think at 12 years old,
that's or nine, kind of, as you said,
yeah. So at first she claimed that he began to have sexual relations with her at the age of 12, but then she mm-hmm. said later that it started when she was 9.
Yeah.
I don't know. At 12, like, you're not very...
You don't like, know a was, lot about the world. Yeah. yeah.
If I was told I was married coerced. To God, then mm-hmm. I don't think I would have taken that seriously.
No, of course not. And also, like, at that age, it's like, what is God to you exactly? Especially if you have a priest looking over you and teaching you, and all you have is to look at him, which also, by the way, I find super, like, screwed up that a man was somehow in charge of women in a convent.
Mm-hmm. Why? Starting at that young age, that's grooming. Yeah. Like, that's
yeah, grooming. Yeah, it is grooming, 100%. And, like, they can deny, and, like, they'll always be right, basically. Mm-hmm. And it's very annoying to me. But, yeah,
and no, it so, still happens. Like, now we always hear those stories.
I know
stories.
It still it's, happens.
I don't
and
know
still,
how this isn't fixed.
It's so crazy, because I even know that there are, like, mental institutions, I say that in air quotes, like mental institutions that priests go to after they commit crimes, such as having sexually assaulting a minor. And they go to these institutes to get better. And then they somehow go back. And these still exist. Mm-hmm. I know that that's true. And that's completely screwed up to me. Like, it's just disgusting.
Yeah, they could probably say, like, kind of in this case, that they were, like, possessed for a little bit.
Exactly. Well, they use the devil as a scapegoat, of course. Again, they always do. And this became a thing, like, in the early modern history. So past the Middle Ages, people started to use demonic possession more and more to falsify or make sure that they wouldn't be accused for what they've done.
Yeah, like a scapegoat. Like,
they used it as a scapegoat. And it's just disgusting. It's so disgusting. Like, you could just say, like, humans are naturally prone to doing sexual acts and whatever, which is terrible, because, like, in this case, it's rape. Mm-hmm. But, like, they would use demonic possession and the leader of lies to, like, get them out of a crime kind of thing. And it's just totally fucked up to me. And then there were some instances where, like, if a woman was raped, she would still be at fault because she didn't scream or cry for help. Like, oh, yeah. it would still be her fault. So not only he would be condemned, but so would she, no matter what.
Yeah, that's and, so gross.
Yeah, it's pretty awful. So screwed up to me. I don't have any other words other than like this was grooming and this was hella screwed up. And yeah.
So I think we can agree that this man was not a witch. He was just a horrible, horrible human being and a rapist for this poor girl. And this entire case actually set a precedent for further trials in France, with more nuns becoming possessed and coming out, and during their possessions, they'll say who their attacker or assaulter was. And we are going to cover one of these cases in next week's episode, what happened in the popular French possessions 20 years later with Urban Grandier. So stay tuned for that one.
Most of the time, the stories we do hear, and like we just know that the Catholic Church, as well as any other Christian church, are known to take advantage of the system constantly. Yeah. It's not unknown at all. Like, these are common stories.
Yep. So
that's that.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you for listening. Merci beaucoup.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Fancy. For additional sources on further reading on this trial, you can read The Encyclopedia of Demons and Demonology by Rosemary Guiley, and also A Notorious Woman, Possession, Witchcraft, and Sexuality in 17th Century Provence by Anita M. Walker and Edmund H. Dickerman. And once again, we would just like to end our episode today with a huge thank you to everyone for listening. I apologize that the subject matter was a little tougher to get through on this one, but we definitely thought it should be worth talking about. Next week's episode is kind of a part two, a continuation, but it has completely different people and a new case. So we hope that you tune in for that one. If you enjoyed our podcast, please don't forget to rate and subscribe to us. It really helps us out. And if you'd like to send us a message or have any questions, feel free to email us at witchstorypodcast@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on social media at witchstorypod. We're on Twitter and Instagram. Tune in again next Tuesday for our part two. Bye, everyone. Mm-hmm.